Welcome back, guys. DGS 104.1 FM KMOX. Tomorrow we have a ball game at 12:10. We will be on after that unless we have a weather delay, which it seems like from Dave Murray that we're going to. And then we're back on Thursday, and then Friday we are off because it's a 1:10 game for the opener in Boston. We're doing the think tank right now. We have our pal Kurt Barr, who's been on many, many times. Returning to the show is Alderman Joe Vollmer. 13 days left, right?
That's correct, sir.
Yeah, how's it feel?
Every day I'm getting younger.
I love it. Ask what you guys want to talk about. And Joe brought up, and we've been talking a lot about media today and generations and social media versus this and the 70s versus the 2020s. And you were talking about when you guys opened Milo's, you had one 19-inch television.
That's correct. We turned it on if the Cardinals were playing or the Blues were playing, which wasn't many games. People used to come to a tavern because that's where they came to see each other.
Yeah.
That was their Facebook page. They'd sit and talk to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. And like you're making the point, Kurt, that when Joe and I at least were growing up, we had sort of a shared, there weren't alternative facts. You could have alternative opinions, but we all agreed on facts. Yeah, this is the way it is. And I think this guy's right and I think you're wrong. But now you really do pick and choose amongst your realities.
You really do. And it's not just like conservative media and progressive media. I mean, we have like different versions of conservative media. We have different versions of progressive media. And there's times when, you know, I'll talk to other conservatives and they start asking me questions like, what are you guys talking about? Like, it's all over the news within that
Newsmax,
within that radio station or that Twitterverse or whatever they're deeply in, and then I'm paying attention to another section of news. And I'm like, no, I was paying attention to something else. And yeah, it's amazing how diverse just news is.
How often can you build bridges between you and fellow conservatives who may be farther to the right than you are?
Well, there's not that many people further to the right of me, but I mean, there's always spectrums. One-on-one, I can build bridges with anybody because, you know, individuals are willing to have a conversation with you, willing to understand, hey, you're a real person, let's talk. There's a handful of people who do not want to understand. They don't want to understand my perspective. And so there's no bridge building because, you know, they're unwilling to. Because you have to have somebody who's willing to talk to you in order to build that bridge at all.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunately it's a small group of people, but unfortunately that those people do exist. The bigger problem is larger groups of people. When you get like a large group who's into this section of news, as we were discussing, you know, their mediaverse, and it's hard to break into necessarily that mediaverse.
Yeah.
And so that's the harder thing. You could talk to one-on-one and convince people, hey, here's the process. Let me answer your questions. But to get a large group of people who all hear the same echo chamber and to get them to understand, hey, here's the facts of how these elections are working, or here's the facts of this issue within the county, that's a harder thing to do.
So I don't expect you to be an expert on tariffs, but I am the farthest thing away from that. I mean, the only D I got in college was in economics, and so I just it goes right over my head. But I wrote on my little show sheet today that for the first time in my life, and I'm 60 now, I feel a direct effect from who's in the Oval Office. There have been people I've liked. There have been people I haven't liked. But I've never felt a big difference in my life. My paycheck hasn't gone significantly up or down. My lifestyle hasn't changed. I've been able to do what I wanted to do. But now that I'm 60, that 401k is critical to me. And it just keeps getting smaller. And so I think a lot of people feel like I do that, hey, Trump, even if you're right, and we can put $500 billion in the federal coffers, that doesn't help me. It's hurting me right now. Why should I not be freaking out?
So, unfortunately, tariff policy and large economic policy is slow. You know, the analogy is doing a U-turn of an aircraft carrier. It takes a long time to get a big boat and to turn and go a different direction. And when you are making massive economic changes like significantly changing tariffs, that, you know, could eventually have positive economic ramifications or could potentially have even more negative ramifications. But the chaos of that uncertainty is definitely something that causes problems. And of course, the stock market, where most of our retirement is in, you know, chaos and uncertainty is the worst thing that can happen. You know, bad economic times but with still some growth, can, you know, that has certainty, can be better, yes, or more reassuring to people than turbulent ups and downs, even though the overall trajectory may be higher.
That's
faster.
My worry, is that this is going to, this is a longer project than 4 years.
I didn't take that economic class to answer
that
question.
I think the hard part for a lot of people too is, where's the evidence that it works? If you could show me, like, this is how it has worked, and it took 5 years, maybe now it takes less, maybe now it takes more, that's a different thing than saying, we don't know.
Joe, you're a businessman. How's this all hit you?
Well, the business I'm in, fortunately, people, whether they're happy or they're sad, come out to to come out to Miles to have a drink because they just want to get away from it all. And that's the reality, is what you have is a it's kind of a three-ring circus going on right now. Someone in office who loves attention and is getting it every second. The blips on my phone constantly from news alerts, a news alert, which are not news at all.
Yeah.
It's just he woke up and decided I wanted to say this today, so we have to listen. And, it affects everything greatly. And it spurs some interesting conversations sometimes at the bar. Sometimes I have to quell them. As you know, you're not to discuss politics, religion, or anything besides sports and, how's your grandmother doing, at the tavern? You know that.
Well, today, or just in the last 24 hours, we had Kid Rock in the Oval Office he looked like he was in a drag show. Like he was wearing this thing that, like, Jed Clampett was an alien. And it made me think of Zelensky. Like, don't you own a suit? You're in the Oval Office. Don't you own a suit? Like, what about this day-hole? You have Elon Musk wearing a cheese on his head, giving people millions of dollars in Wisconsin. What am I missing about the importance of who's on the Supreme Court in Wisconsin?
Wow,
I took you on a ride.
You did. So today's election day in Wisconsin and Florida. And what people are looking at is that, in Wisconsin, which is a little bit more left of center state overall, and it's a state Supreme Court race because they elect their state Supreme Court justices. The question is, will the progressive candidate win that race? As I understand it, the state Supreme Court is divided. So whoever wins that race tilts the state Supreme Court right or left.
Okay.
And so that substantially affects the state of Wisconsin and the rulings that come from that state. And then in Florida, you have a district that I think it was Marco Rubio used to hold that Trump won by 15 points. And the Republican who's running for that seat, who should have easily won, has apparently been lackluster in his campaigning. Mm-hmm. And there is a substantial concern that the Democrat can actually win that seat. And if that's the case, then, people can make the claim that, Trump is harming the brand already and that the midterm election is not going to go well for Republicans.
Yeah. How did Signalgate hit you?
So that, oh my goodness, that's such a hard thing to process.
Because it's so stupid.
Talk about a self-inflicted wound of the worst possible kind. And whether or not, Trump values loyalty, but for that cabinet official to not immediately resign and take the blame, that and then for the
would have been over in 2 days.
It would have, and obviously aside from the fact that they're communicating national defense issues on a non-government platform, you have the issue of the White House couldn't get its messaging straight of, like, what happened, why it happened, and the fact that it lasted a full week of nothing but that issue being discussed. It was shocking. I don't know. I still am trying to wrap my head around how that happened, how it lasted so long.
It's never going to go. It's completely inane how this could even occur. The fact that, I guess I'm being the old man in the room here. It's basic things. What's the need? Everybody wants to use these platforms. Are they secure? Are they not secure? There should be some oversight saying, hey, this is something you do or don't do. There's no adult in the room, it seems like, anymore. Everyone is in charge and no one takes blame.
Yeah. So, Kurt, I view Donald Trump's cabinet as a bunch of Fox News hosts cosplaying as secretaries. Why am I wrong? Because here, you know me well enough. I would like to be wrong. I really would. In four, 3.5 years from now, I would like to eat crow on this show and say I was wrong. Donald Trump is right. Pete Hegseth is a rock star. The tariffs worked and I'm flush and I'm retiring. I don't think that's going to happen. But why do you think that's going to happen?
I mean, Trump's administration, his first time around, he picked some rock solid people
sure did.
To run the administration. Mm-hmm. He had a different vice president who was more engaged with the picking of those cabinet people back then. And so, you know, Trump's second time around, what they call it, Trump 2.0, you know, he has different people choosing his cabinet. And these people don't have the same background in governing and governance. And so what you're seeing is people learning on the job how to govern. It's one thing to talk about, hey, we should do this, we should do that. It's another to actually engage in the policies and practices of governing and following the rules and the policies. And sometimes those rules and policies are restricting, but they're there for a purpose that, you know, even though America is a young democracy at 200 plus years, you know, we still have 200 plus years of tradition of here's how we do things and here's why we do things so that, you know, we do it correctly. And, you know, especially last week's Signalgate, I mean, that's a indication of just, you know, not taking seriously enough the ramifications of those actions.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
No, well, you don't have the old school. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover, for whatever he was, you know, this is a way of doing it. There's no discipline to anything we see here whatsoever. There's no, I've got this job finally. Oh, I can do this. I can't do this. You know, so that doesn't exist any longer. We have people just making the rules up as they go along because they can, apparently. Yeah.
So let me hit the Dems a little bit now. Regardless of how you define the term woke or whether you love it or you hate it, it has really taken over politics and taken over Democrat politics. Whatever it is, the country doesn't seem to like it. And I think the Democrats are now down to 27% approval rating, which I believe is an all-time low. As a Democrat, as a passionate ambassador for your party, what do you think we need to do?
Oh, you're talking to me, huh? I'm the most reluctant politician you've probably ever met in your life. I got involved at the grassroots level as an alderman because I wanted to keep the neighborhoods I grew up in sound and preserve them and let other people experience what I experienced. Along with that comes the responsibility of taking on and listening to, you know, the national issues, which, you know, we're all human beings. We all have rights. We all have things. This is a great country that we are all are blessed to live in. But trying to, sometimes, I hear it in the tavern all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked hard all my life. This is this, this, and, you know, why am I not getting this? Why am I not getting that? You know, why is this person being, you know, put up there in front of me? So I get it. I listen to it. I wish there was an easy answer, but there isn't. You can only be so liberal, you can only be so conservative. I mean, we're all Democrats at City Hall, yet we can't get along.
Yeah.
You have this sect of progressives that comes in and thinks that, you know, we're the stupidest people they ever met in their lives.
We'll be back with more of Joel Vollmer and Kurt Barr. You're welcome to call in anytime, by the way, 314-436-7900. Welcome back, guys. DGS 424. We have Kurt Barr and Alderman Joe Vollmer here for the think tank. Joe was just telling us some really interesting stuff that in 1914, the city of St. Louis was set up intentionally to make the mayor's office weaker than most cities. That's really interesting.
Yeah, there's what they call strong mayor and weak mayor cities. You have county offices that are elected independently of a mayor's support, and they basically run their offices with their own budgets and basically pay rent to City Hall for the space they're using. You know, a license collector, collector of revenue, recorder of deeds. Recorder of deeds, what political process does he, why should he be elected? No offense to any recorder of deeds. They've all been fine people that I've worked with, but this is an appointed job. This gives the mayor has no idea what's going on in these other offices at all. These are not her people or his people, whoever the mayor might be. So you have a system where people are working independently, running their own budgets. I don't know of any other city where the parking tickets are paid to the treasurer's office and do not go into the general revenue. You have a office of the treasurer who is running all the parking garages, running all the parking meters, giving out the tickets. Where is this I've never seen it anywhere else. We're very unique.
Yeah, we really are. So let's say that Kara defeats Tashara. How much can Kara accomplish?
Well, there's a lot to accomplish. And in 4 years, I doubt she's going to get all of it done, hopefully some of it. But the thing is, she was willing to do it and be present to do it. That's what we've been missing the past few years, where our executive is not boots on the ground in the city. Her travel plans, which she says helps her learn, when you're not here during a snowstorm, when you're not here, during my tenure as president of the board, I had to request when she was leaving. I was informed she had left a few times without me even knowing. As president of the board, you're supposed to be informed because in case of emergency, you have to take over those duties. So it's something that we will, if Kara wins, we'll have a mayor who I know, because I know her personally, is dedicated to doing something and being here. Not just traveling around saying, hi, I'm the mayor.
Yeah. What is it like for both of you guys? I've never been in a position. I mean, I was a lawyer for a while, but that was different. I've never been in a body where someone doesn't like me, I don't like them, it's on the news, and then we have to sit down and try to work something out. How do you, like, I watch the Congress, and I think, how the hell are you ever going to talk to that guy again? You just called him every name in the book, and now you're shaking hands with him and voting. Like, how, is it split personality? How do you do it?
It kind of depends on what the disagreement really is. Is this like a, hey, you believe A, I believe B, we're staying true to our values, we can respect each other even though we disagree with each other. There's that type of, and that's when it's easy to shake hands at the end of the day. And then there's the other where one or both parties are denigrating the other personally,
yeah,
and saying you're this horrible person, and then turning around the next day and saying, hey, at that point, it's like, I need your vote on this, and so I'll pretend to like you, but in reality, we can't stand each other. And that's that two-facedness that people don't like about politics.
Yeah.
And so it kind of depends on how people go about disagreeing. Are they doing it in an honest way, or are they doing it in this more of this backstabbing way?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard for the public looking in to understand the difference.
Yeah.
So that's when I see the biggest problem, because when I was in the legislature, I had good relationships with several Democrats because while we voted differently most of the time, we found commonality in certain areas and we could get along in those areas without, denigrating them as people.
Yeah. Joe?
Well, it's, the neighborhood I live in is the old movie saying, keep your friends close and your enemies closer. But down at the board, it was disagree on the floor, then go sit down and have a beer in the office afterwards and talk. It never, ever did personal things get into it until the quote-unquote progressive platform became present, because they came down with an edge, not believing that any of us knew what we were talking about. They came in saying, accusing. There was accusations of bribe, accusations of graft. Now, as we all know, a few years ago, some of that came through, but it wasn't those were certain individuals, but to not be able to have someone come in and you can't even sit and talk to them afterwards. We have that situation, and that's what we've been experiencing since the progressives have come down to City Hall, and slowly it's working its way out, I believe.